Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am profoundly grateful to be with you on this 16th day of February 2020. We're going to look at, tu nauseam, the word now, the now. Something that other teachers talk about. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about this now thing. It's a concept, a precept, not a reality. And I will talk to you about it here in a moment. But before I get into this controversial thing here, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank my sponsors for making this possible. I hope you're watching the series I Gotcha on the website at aspire.org. It's a wonderful series. I think you'll find it very interesting. We did a little tongue-in-cheek thing about Zen, our spiritual practice, what a spiritual practice is all about. I think you'll find it amazing, interesting, and very, very relevant if you're working on yourself. If you're not working on yourself, then it just becomes amusement. But if you are, it's a wonderful thing. And I tried to depict the craziness of Greg's mind in it and give you some insight into even with a crazy Greg, you can enter into the moment of love. You can enter into consciousness. It can be done. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Believe me, anyone. So anyway, I hope you're enjoying the series. I want to thank you for your support. It makes all this possible. If you are not a sponsor, I need you to become one very, very quickly. Your donations are tax deductible. I will send you a receipt for your income taxes. And on top of all of that, you will be helping many, many people who not only listen and watch Aspire, but you will be helping me as I go to hospice every week and serve in that way. Everything you give goes out to someone to help them in some way through Aspire. It's very, very important. I know you get tired of hearing this, don't you? Yeah, that's because everybody goes, yeah, get to the program where they speed it up so they don't have to hear the sales pitch, as they call it. People don't understand how hard it is to do this work and depend on people like them. What is the now? You look it up in the dictionary. It's at the present time or moment, at a time directly following the present moment, under the present circumstances, used to emphasize a particular length of time. So here's this word now. And I have friends of mine who I love to talk about this with. We kind of go back and forth with it. It's a game. It's something to chit-chat about over tea. And when you're looking at the concept of the word now, when is now? That's what I ask. Tell me, when is now? The moment you say now, it's gone. So I get questions about this because talk about it and commentaries and video casts and podcasts and all sorts of things that I do. People ask me, well, wait a minute, you said this, you said that. So this is a he said, she said kind of thing here. And I hope you enjoyed. The first question comes from Carol. It's really very simple. She lives, where is this? San Francisco. She says, I listen to you. I enjoy your programs, blah, blah. And thank you. And she said, Greg, you talk about now as if it doesn't exist, but I'm beginning to understand your premise. Wow. She said, Greg, when is now? Carol. Yeah, when is now? People will say, well, it's every moment. Well, if it is every moment, now is a moment. A moment is a part of time. If you look up the word moment, it's a part of time. So what does that mean? There is time. Are you telling me there is time? There is no time. Not at all. Stephen Hawking spent a great deal of his life working on this idea of, through physics, of time and space. It was very noble, his efforts, and they were wonderful, way beyond the pay grade of a Greg Penn kind of intellect, but went into all sorts of different details about it. But the true aspect of it all is, when is now? As Carol said, is now this very now? But the minute now is here, it's over. You touch it, it's like the old Zen saying, and it is true. You can't put your foot in the river twice. Because the moment you put your foot in the river, it has changed. And you lift it up, and it has already changed. It's changing all around your foot when you put it into the river. So there is no now. And every Tolle has made millions of dollars off of this, fooling people. And it's easy. It's kind of like, you know, nobody wants to believe that the king has no clothes, but he doesn't. Some people see it and laugh. The others are just going, no, he has clothes. I can see them. There is no now. There is no time. There is no way to take what I'm talking to you about and put it in a syntax of words, of thoughts. This whole thing of now is about eternity. And eternity is something that is always changing. Eternity is the vastness that my mind cannot fathom, my Greg Penn mind. It cannot fathom it, not even remotely, not at all. So when I think in terms of mind, and I think in terms of my mind and how my mind works, I'm missing. I'm totally missing it. And how I am missing it is because my finite mind wants to wrap around a love, a energy, a essence, a formula that the mind cannot absorb. When you meditate, you're doing more than just what people would say is meditation. You are sitting in a form that is formless. I'm talking very slow and deliberate now, so forgive me. And when you're sitting in this formlessness, nothing that was, is, and everything that is becomes was. Nothing is the way I think it is. Nothing is working the way I think it is. Nothing is happening the way I think it is. So whatever is or appears to be is, does it exist? If you have a meditative mind, you don't fight these things. You don't think about them. You don't make them a point of reference in your life. You simply bask in the eternity of what I call the immortal. There is the immortal. It goes on and on and on. It is not tarnished by the movement of energy. It is not tarnished by the movement of manifestation, things manifesting, things going out of manifestation, things coming in manifestation, again, things going out of manifestation. To become immortal is what should be greatly of interest to a person. There is that immortal side to all of us. This immortal side is timeless, nowless. There is no now in it. It presents its own gestalt. It presents its own reality. And this reality cannot be measured by Greg Penn thinking or your thinking at all. So, Carol, when is now? Well, if you want to get into it, you can make anything now if you want to. I mean, you know, now. This is the now. What is the now? How quickly does it change? There is no now. There is the immortal, the constant. But now? Nah. That is for people who like to get caught up in their own thinking and are narcissistic. People who are narcissistic love to think they know now. I have just found that to be true, and I just don't engage in it at all. There you are. Thank you, Carol. I hope it helped. I'm sure it was a twister, and please forgive me. Namaste. Next question. This is from Kathy. Where is this? In Carolina. She says, if there is no time, as you say, is there a now instead of, Kathy? Well, Kathy, if there is no time, there can be no now if now is a part of time. And what good does it do for any of us to understand any of this or put it into some kind of verbiage or some kind of philosophical belief? How does it help you? So people will say there is only the now, just deal with the now. That's not true, because whatever, your life is a continuum. It's a huge continuum. So whatever is happening in this moment is leading to the next moment, is leading to the next moment, is leading to the next moment, all the way down to eternity. So is it all going to be like this moment? No, everything is changing. Life is in a flux. It is always changing, and it's always in accord with whatever it is that seems to us to be very, very important. So I would ask you, Kathy, what is time? Do you understand why we get old and sick and die? A lot of people think it's because of time. Because as you get older and older and older, you become wrinkly and kind of flabby, and things start to happen. Hair falls out of people, teeth, all sorts of things go on. Is that due to time? If there is time and you think that that's what makes us old, you're missing. Did Buddha get old? Oh, yes. Most definitely he got old. Would have Jesus, had he lived long enough in his conventional body? Yes, he would have gotten old. Everybody gets old. It isn't due to time. There are a couple of factors that make up age. The first factor is the atmosphere that you and I are in. We are in a biological environment, and we are constantly being bombarded by energetics of this world, the collective unconscious. These energetics are constantly bamming us, bombing us, telling us this, this, and this. And whether you participate in it, if you lived in the Himalayas, way, way far away from any civilization, would you still be susceptible to the now, to the moment, to the essence of time? That's what you got to ask yourself. We would, of course, still be susceptible to the energetics of this world, which we think of as time, now, space, whatever you want to call it. We exist beyond time itself, beyond existence itself as we know it in our minds, as we can rationalize it and theorize it. This atmosphere that we are involved in, this atmosphere of the kinetics of the race consciousness, the whole idea of the collective consciousness, bombard our bodies. Our bodies are a part of it. Now, should there come a time when we are not bombarded by this, or that we build an aura of us, around us, within us, of love. Then we become timeless. But we see that even with that, the body still is going to degenerate and deteriorate, because that's the way it's supposed to be in this world. You're not here to live forever. You're not here to be young forever. And people have this thing, you know, they want people to be forever the way they think of them in their minds. That's why movie stars and people like that are always doing the cosmetic thing, the surgeries, the whole thing, because they want to look youthful. They want to look like they did when they were younger and give people what they want, make them think they're special because they never aged. You look as good as you did when you were in your 20s or 30s, and people love this. They think this is very important. But what good is it, let's say, if your body looks, you know, 20 or 30 years old and you're 50, but your mind and your emotions are the same, they're working against you, and pretty soon, after a period of time, you succumb anyway. You're not going to find great insight in looking young. The insight that we all require is awakening, spiritual awakening. To awaken to that which lives so profoundly and deeply within us that we are no longer fussing around with the minutia, as it were, of our appearance, of age. With age comes the opportunity for change. The chemicals in the body change, the neurons. We are no longer living from the exact chemistry that we had in our 20s and in our 30s. Now, all of a sudden, a change comes about in our being. We start to see, oh, I don't have this to fight through in my body or that to fight through in my body. We start living in a different way, in a less hostile way. So we no longer have the ambition, the pride, the vanity we used to have. There is some really wonderful things that come with age. But if you're not of that ilk and you don't think in terms of what is important, how this is all important, then you will miss and you will think that you're getting old is an ugly thing. The human body deteriorates, degenerates into whatever it's going to do genetically, and that's the end of that. But do you continue on? What is this now? It doesn't apply to this. Your body is moving along in the narrows, I say, of the collective unconscious. You are being bombarded with thoughts, emotions, precepts, concepts that are all wearing away at the human body. This is a fragile instrument that we are in. Should you and I be meditative, we can understand how the body is going to be subject to karma, to the collective unconscious, and how it's going to, so to speak, go on in its fruitage and maturity into this thing called old age. It isn't pretty at times because we didn't take care of our minds. We succumb during the course of our lifetime to many a genetic trait. We gave in to, you know, trends and traits of the society, of the culture. We missed. We didn't take care of our minds. When you don't take care of your mind, you don't take care of your body. I have had a lot of friends and students who I have tried to help over the years who quickly succumb all the time to their desire, their ambition, their pride, their vanity. And all of them were very unhappy people and eventually died way too soon. If you would look at it from the point of view of, you know, science. Why? It isn't just what we eat, although that's part of it. It's more than that. It's how we live with our minds. It's how we live with our emotion. It's how we live with our genetics. It's how we live with the body. And if you let the body have its way and give and live from the impulses of the body, you're going to find that you and I, well, suffer. But I want you to understand, Buddha was old when he died. He wasn't this young Siddhartha. Everybody gets old. I'm getting old. Everybody gets old. I don't want you to be ashamed of it. I don't want you to be feeling like you failed or whatever. You didn't. And the proof of the pudding is not to look young. The proof of the pudding is to enter into immortality while you're here now, living as love. Because love is the only immortality there really is. I gotta go. Thank you, Kathy, for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. Where is the reality of now in time? And this is from Larry in Arizona. Where is the reality of now in time? Well, there is no time, so that eliminates the now. And what is reality? That is something for each and every one of us to decipher for ourselves. I don't feel like my reality, for instance, Larry, would not be yours. Not that mine is better or not that mine is worse. It just would be not the same. Why? Because reality is based in the state of my karma. And whatever my karma is dictating to me, whether I'm opposing my karma and being contrary to it, or I'm accepting my karma and I'm living with it and flowing with it, that will determine my lifetime, the reality of my life. So you and I are shown different things about our lives through our karma. How things will happen to us, how they won't happen to us, the way they work, the way they don't work, the way things are. Everything is derived out of my karma. It is the glass ceiling of my life. Now, should I be willing to see the state of that glass ceiling, if I am willing to understand the nature of it, now, the chance to transcend karma exists. And it exists as the presence, believe it or not, of love itself. It is all about love. Reality is love. So how authentic is love to me? How willing am I to drop my feverish desires for accomplishment and pride and whatever it is that people say they have to have? How quickly will I drop that? How quickly will you drop that? How quickly will you rise up and see the reality that is the goodness of love in you? You would have to live by a whole different set of principles. Principles, let me give you one of them very quickly. Mercy, very important. All goodness follows mercy. If you're a merciful person, if you can live in the mercy of compassion and loving kindness, goodness will follow you. If you and I don't live in that kind of element, we will struggle very deeply with anything that we are experiencing, and we will turn it into some kind of chaos that doesn't deserve our wrath. So there you are. The meaning of my existence, of your existence, is based on spiritual principles that we are indifferent to, ignorant of, and don't care to know, for the simple fact that we are looking for wealth and longevity rather than compassion and immortality. And that's the big difference with everything. And I'm out of here. I'm running out of time. Thank you, Larry, for your beautiful question. I hope it helped. Please forgive me. Namaste. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with me this weekend. We'll be back on the air next weekend. Thank you for your letters and your emails. They mean a lot to me, and I will answer all of your questions that, you know, I can. And I hope that you submit some. please forgive me, eh? Namaste.